Todd McShay has always helped me with my list of quarterbacks. They always say that Mel Kiper tries to steal Todd McShay's quarterback list every day. Todd knows a lot more than Mel Kiper. All right, that's enough of that.
Todd McShay.
Yeah, he kind of sucked. He did. Like, and he knows it. And he goes back and he looks at the tape. And there's a lot of things that he can work on. His footwork was not what it needed to be.
Evaluating talent for over 30 years.
I love his production like everybody does. But I wonder about the scheme fit. When he's 6'2", why is Mel disagreeing? He's 6'2", he's 248 pounds. You look at him as a player, he can come off the edge.
Todd. Wait, take a look at his production. The SEC is an outside linebacker. Playing through an injury, two successive years, putting up incredible numbers, tremendous motor, can beat you a variety of ways. I think this is a guy to meet, Todd. Deserves to be a top 10 pick.
NFL draft analyst for The Ringer.
We got Todd McShay. They did a live show just the other day. They're doing Saturday nights. He and his guy, Mensch. So McShay has been a massive addition to The Ringer.
In the McShay Report, a very excellent newsletter that everybody should subscribe to. It pops right into you. It's like, I woke up this morning, 7 o'clock, I'm looking at text, Celtics all of a sudden got sold, then your newsletter came. I'm like, what a great morning. I haven't even had coffee yet.
Host of The McShay Show.
The McShay Show is going live on the road for the first time ever. That live show is in Chicago. It's September 10th. We're going to have a blast that night. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Todd McShay with Spiegel and Holmes.
I need to get them in a room.
You guys are the not messing around crew. I like it.
Because this not around thing is about to go both ways.
On 670 The Score.
It's true. We do our best to not mess around. Todd McShay is now joining us here on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. And no lies were told inside of that open for Todd McShay. If you want to go see his show, you can go to Lincoln Hall Wednesday, September 10th. Doors open at 6 p.m. and you can check out the show. I'm so happy that you're doing this. I love when shows like pods put themselves out there and get with the people. What made you make Chicago a tour stop for you, Todd?
Well, let me start with this. Of all the shows I've gone on, and it's probably been hundreds over 25 years of doing this, I don't know if there's a better in bump or a lead up to a guest coming on than what you guys do. So the production crew deserves a lot of credit. We're excited, man. First live show on the road ever for the McShay Show. And we chose Chicago because, A, I just love the city. I'm from Boston, admittedly. We have our draft out in L.A., we've got all different places across the country that I've been able to visit and spend a lot of great time over the years. But Chicago to me is like, first of all, the meal. I'm a foodie, and the meals and going out at night. And then the sports fans. You've got the Midwest. It's kind of the epicenter there. Obviously, we had that great Chicago draft several years back that I enjoyed. The first time that we got out of New York City. We had 175 and sunny, beautiful day, and the next was sideways rain. It was perfect Chicago weather. But I feel like it's the right place to do it. And it's kind of the middle of the country. You've got all these fans from the Big Ten, from Chicago Bears. I thought it would be a perfect place to do it. And we're excited. Like the promo said, it's coming up next Wednesday, September 10th. Big Cat from Barstool is going to be joining us. He's our special guest. It's going to be Mensch and myself, and we're going to do about 90 minutes of a show. It's going to be an intimate gathering at Lincoln Hall, and we'll hopefully get to shake hands with everyone who comes and visits. It's going to take questions for as long as there are questions, and should be a lot of fun that night.
Lincoln Hall is a really cool spot.
You're going to love that place.
I've never been, actually. I'm excited to get there.
Yeah, it's owned by the same people who have Shuba's, the longtime music venue over there at Belmont
Todd,
Southport.
My partner won't tell you this, but he's a singer in a band, and he plays a lot of venues here. You played Lincoln Hall?
Yeah, a while back, yeah. It's a really cool venue, and right down the street from where Lounge Jacks used to be, the great Lounge Jacks. But Chicago's a fascinating college football town, man. And frankly, it's a topic for us through the years, all the years of doing this, because like right up the street from where you are is a massive Michigan State bar right there on the corner.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there on Wellington between like Belmont and Diversey, there's an unbelievable Iowa bar. There's a great Michigan bar. Like there's incredible Wisconsin bars all over the place.
You go into Wrigleyville, there's a couple of Alabama bars.
This is a very disparate college football town, so it's hard to talk college football, but sometimes, like, this as the mecca of the Midwest, dude, like, big games get serious buzz here, and they do. And that's why this weekend was awesome. Like, I'm realizing just how much the new playoff format, Todd, has allowed teams to schedule big time matchups in week one and week zero and week two with impunity, right? Because you can use it as a measuring stick. You can use it as a measuring stick, and you don't have to worry that a loss, even a bad loss, is going to rule you out of playoff competition.
And that's why, you know, Clemson decides, hey, you know, we've got our schedule in the ACC. We play South Carolina at the end of the year. But how cool would it be to have LSU come to our place week one of the season, Saturday night, our Death Valley, not theirs, and host that game? And they wind up losing, but it's a close game. It's tight till the end. LSU appears, maybe we all underrated them, appears to maybe be, you know, certainly a college football playoff team, but I don't know how you don't rank them one or two this week coming into week two of the season after the performance they had. And the same for Texas going to the Shoe. First-year starting quarterback in Arch Manning, who's coming a third career start. Brutal place to play unless you're Michigan, right? And to go in there, and it was not a pretty game, but they hung tough with Ohio State. And Ohio State looks to be, I'm not saying they're as good as last year, but looks to be a damn good football team. And so no voter in their right mind is going to look at that and be like, well, I don't know. I don't know if Clemson's going to. Like, we've got 11 more regular season games, conference championships. Like, there's opportunity for both of those programs. And to me, it's not a massive drop in the polls for either program. It's an opportunity now to get back, and the schedule lightens up for both programs for the next couple of weeks before things get serious. And we'll see big improvement, I expect, from both of those teams over the next 2-3 weeks.
Todd, I spent the summer reading the Wickersham book, American Kings, and it's fascinating book.
And I haven't read it yet, and I'm a huge Wickersham guy. He's a friend, but I'm dying to get into that.
I think
it's as good as
yes, you're gonna love it, and you're gonna love it because it really talks about the professionalization of quarterbacking, and from the time that someone shows a little bit of talent from when they're playing, you know, 12 U ball to getting to where Caleb Williams is right now, for example. It's fascinating to me, but I also think that it then puts such an uneven amount of pressure. Like, I kept thinking about the Arch Manning thing. I was watching the game, and you're right to give the context of that was his third start, but the anticipation and the expectation on him is so high. I don't know if he did not have a good game, and his throwing platform was all off and all that stuff, but that's what I expect from a guy that's making his third start in a really tough place and with a defense that's really good. So how do we get to the place where we are giving the love where it's needed, but we're also like, hey, this kid is still, no matter what his name is, this kid is still a kid, and he's trying to figure out how to do this job.
It's a tough tightrope to walk, right? The Manning family and the Manning resources have allowed Arch, you know, certain things and opportunities and coaching and different things throughout his youth that a lot of young men just simply don't have. But on the other hand, the Manning name creates this urgency and this expectation. And it comes with I started our show off the other day. Like, people just suck, man. People suck, right? Like, they do. Our society today, especially, more so than I can remember in my lifetime, with social media, it's not like the old guy, but social media and the access to everything and the quick responses, the memes, the GIFs, he has one bad game, doesn't play up to expectation, and it's like, oh, he's a bust. Here we go again, another overhyped quarterback. So it's like everyone just take a deep breath. No, he did not play to standard. Yes, it was surprising even for me, knowing that he has been coached at a very high level, and he missed some throws that I just don't expect to see from Arch or from any other starting quarterback at Texas or a big-time program miss. So, like, I want to see improvement. You need to see improvement, massive improvement on those throws. But I also know this for 2.5 decades of doing it. Like, the biggest improvements you see in a quarterback, look at Lenoris Sellers last year at South Carolina. Abysmal in his first start. It was, you know, turnovers, strip sacks,
front side pressure he wasn't feeling, turning the ball over. Even when he wasn't turning it over, it was turnover worthy plays. And then we saw a little bit more, a little bit less of that, but still a lot of the same in week two. Week three, it got better. Week four, all of a sudden, he starts to take off. So I'm kind of expecting the same from Arch. And I see this improvement from a lot of young quarterbacks. It's not necessarily even, you know, in game one. It's from game one to game four or five. So let's see where he is around, you know, first week of October. I think it'll be a very different product. The other thing is, too, like, we all were like, yeah, Ohio State lost eight players to the NFL draft from their defense alone last year. And we know Caleb Downs is back. We know Sonny Styles is back at linebacker. They've got like three really good proven players. But eight guys went to the NFL. How good can they be? And how, like, how in-depth can Matt Patricia be as a first-time college coordinator coming in as the defensive coordinator at Ohio State? Like, how intricate can he be? How complex can he be on the defensive side? Well, the answer was obvious early on, as complex as he wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a brilliant coaching job. But the hardest part of the coaching job wasn't the schemes that he threw out there. It was getting a bunch of guys that hadn't started a lot of games to execute those schemes and to do it so flawlessly. So it's going to be a while before they see a defense that can throw that kind of stuff at him. I think Steve Sarkisian, who's the offensive play caller, in addition to being the head coach, is going to learn from that as well. I think you're going to see Arch Manning start to run the football more, a little more run pass option, not necessarily like the RPO stuff, the zone option stuff, but I'm saying like get outside the pocket, utilize his mobility, create some opportunities where if defender comes, you dump it off. Defender drops, he goes. I think you're going to see a little different, more aggressive approach with his mobility moving forward. But it was disappointing. But it's not over. Like the evaluation isn't over after one game for Arch.
Todd McShay from the McShay Show joining us here on Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score. He was in awe of the open from our guy Chris Tannehill, like so many have.
Chris,
been.
Nice job, man.
There he is right there. You join a good group. Ice Cube once complimented Chris Tannehill on his open. So, you know, you join a very good group. So you were great talking about Caleb as we all were trying to figure out Caleb leading up to the draft. And then we got to watch his first season with just some horrific coaching surrounding him and an infrastructure that Ryan Poles should be embarrassed by. And now he's got a really good infrastructure. I know that we're close to it and dissecting it every day. But from your perspective, knowing Caleb as a prospect, what do you make of this union with Ben Johnson and everything that you've seen so far in terms of how it's coming together?
Well, we've seen ups and we've seen downs in the preseason, right? And I've been just as interested and kind of dialed in as I think a lot of Bears fans have been. I know this. It's the right guy for him. I also know this. There's more, I don't want to say undoing, but more adjusting with Caleb to play, you know, on schedule, in scheme, making it his norm, making it his reality, his day-to-day function, than it is with some other quarterbacks who come out who played maybe more in structure than he did. And he had Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley is, you know, you look at what Baker's done. You look at what Kyler Murray. Like, it's not Lincoln Riley. It's that Caleb played out of structure more than any quarterback that I can remember under Lincoln Riley. And so taking all those skills that he has and keeping him dialed into what he needs to do with his eyes and marrying his feet to his eyes and being consistent with that, it's not going to happen overnight. But we saw like some of the good that we have seen with the positive flashes and the positive drives that he's had. That's what I expect to see more and more of as the season progresses. I'm certain there's going to be some negatives. We saw it in the preseason game after the first start. There's going to be some ups and downs. There really is. And I think it's only natural for it to take time for you to kind of undo your thought process of I'll run around and scramble and create on my own to get to where you are. This is what I believe in. This is what I do. Play to play. Trust my eyes. Trust my reads. Trust my work. And then if I get to a point where that it's not available anymore, where the reads failed me, this play's not working, then I can utilize my natural ability. So I expect to see I expect to see it like tumultuous, up and down, maybe week to week, series to series at times. But as the season progresses, almost like the stock market, like The lows won't dip as low as we saw last year. So I'm excited to watch it. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a great challenge for Ben Johnson to adjust on the fly as the season goes. But it's going to start to click. I truly believe it. And I know that he has the talent, and I know that Ben Johnson is the right guy for him.
You're saying what I've been saying like the last few weeks is that this is the hardest thing to do. He's got to unlearn and learn at the same time.
Yes.
Like
yes.
It's so difficult when he has been playing. And I've tried to explain this to people that if you watch the USC stuff, it is him making stuff happen because he had to, because of how bad the defense was at USC, and frankly, because it allowed him to use a lot of the special skills that he has. To go from a pistol or a shotgun set to now taking snaps from under center for play action, like, I don't know if people understand how impossible that is. And Todd, for a guy like you, who's been watching these guys come up from the high school ranks to the college, where now pretty much everyone is playing out of shotgun or pistol, for a quarterback to go under center, how difficult of a task is that?
You know, it's interesting because I think for a while his shotgun went from like 10% to like 30, then to 50, then to 60, 70, and all the way up. I used to laugh at analysts who were like, you know, taking the actual snap and getting it. It's like, no, it's not about taking the snap. It's about the timing. It's like watching, you know, synchronized swimming or like ballet or like whatever. It's the timing. It's instead of you take the snap and you're already dropped. It's now I take the snap. I'm turning. I got my head and back is to in the entire half of this field. It's making sure if I'm on a three-step drop, the routes are marrying up, the timing, get my back foot into the dirt and plant drive, you know, and then five-step and seven-step and all of that. So it's all about the timing of it. And there's still timing within the shotgun, but it's different when your feet are moving at that rapid level to drop. You're reading down the middle of the field out, and it's just it's a whole different experience. So that's absolutely part of it. And then part of it is, like you started off with, just undoing some habits, a lot of habits, right? What you got used to doing, what made you special, what got you drafted at number one overall. It's figuring out, like, how do I use all those things, those tools in my bag, but channel them the right way. And so, like I said, it's going to be a work in progress. There are going to be some good moments. There are going to be some frustrating moments. But I think the bad plays, the negative moments, are not going to dip as low as they used to. And we'll continue to see it start to kind of grow over time.
We only got a short time left with you, Todd, so this can be a quick answer. Bill Belichick going to ever have sustained success at North Carolina?
Oh, gosh.
Can you even imagine that at this point?
Yeah, I was texting with my mom. Who's a Patriots fan forever, lived in Boston.
Oh, boy.
And, she has a D. That's where I get my passion for football and sports. She's a huge Belichick fan, right? And she's like, kind of like everyone else in this area in New England, is like, how could this fail? He's Bill Belichick. It's college, you know, like the ACC. And I'm like, I don't know, Mom. Like, I don't know that it's going to be a complete disaster. But I think it's going to, you know, it's going to take, he's got 70 new players he's bringing in and new schemes on the offensive and defensive side. But he does have good coaches with him and the support of the university. You know, I'm trying to explain it all in text. And then by the end of the game, she texts me and she's like, well, it is a disaster. Like, this isn't going to work. You know, like, it's just amazing. You know, the kind of the average fan who's not in this every day,
yeah,
who went from like, there's no way that this can work. And I'm like, it's not going to be a disaster. Like, oh no, this is a disaster. Like, this doesn't, no, it's not going to work.
So. Yeah. The people don't realize like the mechanism that is college football, and it's so many different layers than what the NFL is. It's a,
yes,
it's going to be a work in progress for sure. Go see Todd McShay and the Todd McShay Show live Wednesday, September 10th at Lincoln Hall, 7 p.m. is when the show starts. The doors open up at 6 p.m. Todd, this was great, man. Thanks for doing this. Good luck next week. It'll be a lot of fun. Chicago will come out and support you.
Yeah, I mean, come on, Chicago. Don't be the city that lets us down. I'm excited. Like, I want to meet everyone. I want to talk ball with everyone. It's going to be a lot of fun. So if you're around, you got a little free time, come join us. I expect you both to be there.
I actually think I can make it.
You can?
There we go.
Yeah, I
got to return some videotapes, but thank you so much. No, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I couldn't resist the line. I couldn't resist. Wow. You know,
I appreciate it. I appreciate it. All right, we'll see at least one of you
there, Todd, thanks a lot, man. We appreciate
all right, guys.
You.
Thanks, I appreciate Todd. Your time. Have a good one.
That's Todd McShay. Wow, this you got candy for everybody today,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, you know what I should have said is, look, man, I'm planning a bar mitzvah, okay? Because that's what's going on. Like, all of my thoughts, all my free time is overtaken by bar mitzvah planning. That's
Tanny, you should have seen Spiegs in the hallway.
You saw me walking back and forth.
He turned the corner.
Well, there was a big closed-door meeting by the Golden Tee earlier this afternoon, so I was like, ooh, something's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I wasn't a part of that. But,
well, no, I think it was just him is my point.
Oh.
Solo.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's like, all right, I got to go over here. He's like, no,
get over there.
I need to come over here.
Get over there.
And over there. I'm over here now.
I'm doing a Jackie Mason routine in my own little solo meeting.
Or crisscross, either way. And
Daddy Mac will make you.
That's right. So
Chicago. Daddy Mac.
Over here. Go over there.
And I'm like, are you all right? And he's like, I got things. I thought I had time to go get coffee. Yeah. I didn't have time to go get coffee.
It's just a lot going on. We got a lot going on. And candlesticks make a nice gift.
They do.
I
think for Ruben, it'll be cash for me.
He'd probably appreciate
that.
Yeah,
that's they always do. When we come back.
There's a lot going on here.
That's what
there
I'm saying.
Is. There
he's,
is.
He's on the show next week, by the way. Joe Buck will be on the show on Monday on Bears-Vikings game day.
So wait, you mean to tell me that we'll have Troy Aikman on the show on Thursday?
Yes.
And then Buck will be on the show on Monday?
Yes. That is exactly correct.
Well, I just found out that we're going to have Kurt Warner as well on the show on Monday.
That's what I'm talking
about.
Come
on now.
So basically everyone who's broadcasting the Bears game is going to be on our show in the next 5 days. Perfect. That sounds like a plan for the Spiegel and Holmes listener. I like that. We were supposed to have a conversation yesterday, and it got kind of poo-pooed by Jason Leisure. And I'm like, you know what? We still going to have that conversation because it's interesting, and it's human nature. And we spend a lot of time talking about that as it pertains to sports. The captain thing. Let's discuss it. The Bears have less captains, and there are people who were captains that aren't captains. We'll talk about that next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes show flashback.
Should the Bears have seven captains again this year? All
Well, if they can get a few O linemen and D linemen in there, it'd be nice. So you can have seven, but let's get a few linemen in there, a few guys who, I always say, guys, the farther you get away from the football, the farther you get away from football.
We got captains, so it's I know it's a larger group than we're used to, but we have a bigger group of leadership now.
And Ben Johnson came in and did exactly what Olin was talking about.
That is really interesting. But that quote from Olin, which has
such
left
a
mark
quote.
And stuck around our football brains all offseason, was in response to the captain question. I did not remember that was the context. That's fascinating. Because now there are lineman captain. Mm-hmm. There are older veteran captains.
Guys with real accomplishments for their career.
Uh-huh. Rather than a hodgepodge of theoretical leaders designed to prop up a bad leader in a head coach.
Default leaders because there weren't guys here with those resumes. Mm-hmm. Not that the guys that were captains last year weren't worthy, but there's a difference. Like there's a difference between, like, just look at Joe Tooney's resume. There's a difference between him and the guys that were captains last year.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that he's accomplished, like he's got the hardware.
I mean, as soon as Joe Tooney was signed, and as soon as, at least for me, we heard from Grady Jarrett the first time, because I knew about the resume, but I didn't know about that guy's mindset and that guy's gravitas and the respect level around the league.
Yes.
So as soon as both those guys got here, it's like, okay, well, those, that seems obvious.
Doesn't that feel a lot better when you add it to Kevin Byard and Caleb Williams? Like that feels like three guys that have done stuff in the league, and your quarterback and your kicker. We're good.
Yeah. It feels very intuitive. Now, it was a player vote. Simply a player vote. So that helps, too. Because what's interesting is we've got several guys who were captains last year and are not this year.
And I wonder if those captains were like, I'm going to vote for Grady Jarrett and for Joe Tooney
because
I don't need this nonsense.
Would you like to see DJ Moore's ballot and see if he voted?
I very much would. I'd like to see Jalen's.
See if those guys vote for themselves.
Did you vote for yourself? Nope. I'm on an island.
Oh, hopefully we get a chance to ask Jalen that very soon. That'd be a hilarious question. So player voting. Come on, you can tell us, Jalen. Did you vote for yourself for captain?
And he's like, no, I voted for Grady Jarrett.
Well.
And Kevin Byard.
How many could you vote for?
Did I vote for myself?
I mean, could you vote? Do we have any details on the process? I haven't seen any details. It's like the Baseball Writers Association of America with the Hall of Fame.
With less gatekeeping.
I miss him overnights. He was terrific.
Less gatekeeping?
He was. I mean, he kept some things away from the air.
But less than most people.
Yeah, I mean, Mo gatekeeping. He was on a different station.
That guy.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
But, you know, the other interesting thing is that they're all grown-ups, except for Caleb. Caleb is the only one who's under the age of what, 29?
Yeah, and he's a pretty mature 23. Is he 23? Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty mature 23 years old guy.
So look, do you think, or have you heard anything? Have you read anything? Have you, because we haven't really heard them comment on it specifically. Jalen was, you know, Jalen, DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, TJ Edwards.
And Tremaine Edmonds.
That's five dudes who were captains last year and are not this year.
I think that the only person that has a gripe is TJ Edwards. Because he is another guy that has a pretty strong resume. And he didn't do anything that would lead you to believe he should not be a captain this year. Like his play was exemplary last year. There were no issues with him. There's nobody questioning. He's, to me, the only person with a gripe.
Cole?
If there is a gripe.
Does Cole have a gripe?
Sure. He could say, I'm the longest tenured guy here, and I should be a captain. But I imagine Cole probably wants some of that stuff off of his plate, too.
Maybe. But it...
I imagine it hurt.
But, well, that's the thing. Like, I can see just on a human level.
Yeah. I can totally imagine, especially since it is a player vote, where you're like, I thought I was good. I thought I was doing really well here, and apparently I'm not.
Well, Cole's got to be, you know, I mean, they drafted a tight end as well. So mm-hmm. your NFL mortality comes at you very fast, you know?
It's year seven.
It's the fact that it's already year seven for Cole is insane to think about. So I don't know. I'd be curious how it feels. It wouldn't feel great to me necessarily.
Not at all.
I could see being upset by it and having to do some work. Look, we all got to do some work to get our heads in a good space on the daily. Let's be honest. If we're really being forthright and conscious about snubs, real or perceived, yeah. You know, like, I don't love the way I'm being treated at work. Okay, well, still got to show up to work. Let me get myself in a good headspace.
What did we do?
You guys?
Is it the Jason Leisure stuff?
I have a list.
We're not surprised.
What I've done is I've put together a gratitude list for you guys.
Oh, that's nice. Right. Oh, how we should be grateful?
Yes.
Got it.
It's one thing to do gratitude. I do gratitude lists for myself in the morning, but I'm taking it next level. I'm putting together gratitude lists for you guys to be thankful for about things that I do for you.
Hey, fellas, real quick, let's go to our list.
Yes.
Let's see how we did.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Tanny, number one on your gratitude list for me.
Wow, he's really going through with this.
Just my presence next to you in the office.
No, yeah, I was going to say your fondness for things on plaques and your ability to recite them verbatim on the spot. You've always had a great reverence for plaques, and I've always appreciated that about you.
You know what you should do for him, Tanny? You should bring him the plaque of your Lissagor. And have him read that.
Oh, that's in a plaque.
It's much too heavy, much too big of an award to bring into the studio.
They
Sorry,
should yeah. they should add a line to that. They should add a line to that.
They should, and then you should remember it because you forgot it.
I should tease and it you, and not deliver it. I hope people listening now heard the open where I joined a really tremendous crew of people who stammered and struggled for content. It was right there. It was me, Mark Grody, Les Grobstein, and Mike.
You had
Sessa.
The content. You just lost your place. It happens. We had more time
sure.
in the segment, okay. we would have done it.
Hey, sometimes I'm an idiot. Like, I don't know if you guys knew this.
Did you put that on Alex's list of things that he should be grateful for about you?
Hey, Spinks, you're not an idiot. Like, I'll say it.
Spot on. Oh, I thought that was Alex.
I mean, every once in a while, you know, we're all idiots, and that was my moment. All right, so anyway, so back to this.
You're not going to go around the room, just me, huh?
Yeah, no, Tanny, for the gratitude list? Yeah.
I actually saw the list, and he put the Flo Rida mug that he got me from somewhere in Indiana at the top of that list, so I already know. It's cool. We're good.
I love that you remember where I got it. I did get it in Goshen, Indiana. I got you a Florida mug and then tried to play it off as a Flo Rida mug. There's Mitch Rosen. Mitch, there's a list for you. Things you should be grateful for about me. I'll get it to you. Tanny, do you want to hand that to Mitch? You hand that directly to him. No? All right.
What am I grateful about you?
Yeah, yeah.
We've known each other a long time.
Oh, that's true.
Wow.
I have to think about this.
You'd think something would come to mind faster. I'll be honest.
You'd think.
But
it's not going well.
I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Oh, he's going into the tank for the rest of the show, man.
We're good.
You know what? We do need to make a Starbucks run for my man.
No, I'm good, man. I got some of my Breakfast of Champions. I got the Hot Joe.
Okay.
We're good. Don't you worry. You're a good partner. You're very concerned when you see something wrong with your boy. But I'm all right. I'm going to be okay. I'm
always concerned. Yeah.
You know? You live there.
I'm the mayor of Worry Town. So I worry. And I want you to be okay.
I'm like, okay.
That's
all right, just to wrap this up with a bow.
Okay.
We worried about anybody with some sour grapes about having the C removed.
I don't think so, but I do think that us asking the question of Jalen is required.
I think it is.
I think, because I'd love to get his perspective on it, because you go from that moment of, for him, remember the place that he was in when Eberflus got here. Eberflus had him on the third team. He's clearly, at the time, like, your best player.
Yeah.
And you had him on the third team. And then he rises to become a second team All-Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the better corners, if not the best corner.
Yeah.
In the NFL.
You know, the thing that I worry about with any team is if dudes are feeling a little bit grumpy or a little bit overlooked or a little bit disrespected, you can start to go for self, you know? And that happens in bands, it happens in teams, it happens on radio shows, not this one, but you know what I mean? Like, you can go for self a little bit, and in football, you do that, a team can crumble quickly.
It can. It can also be a motivator. And I'm glad that you use the word grumpy, because it allows me to tell the Alex Brown story.
Okay.
Of Alex Brown having to deal with Mark Anderson coming in and having, 12 and a half sacks that year, and not being treated with the respect that a guy who is fourth on the all-time sack list, because don't say top five, because that implies that he might be five.
Yeah.
He's number four on that list. That whole camp in Bourbonnais, Alex literally wore a grumpy, the dwarf shirt around campus. And then he had one of his best seasons as a pro. Like, he knew what he needed to do,
uh-huh.
and he used it as motivation. Lovey was the king of, like, low-key motivating things. And Alex's whole thing was like, I knew that Mark couldn't play the run, and I can. So I knew I would get myself on the field.
That's interesting. So, but Alex still behaved like a good teammate should. He stayed
assignment
engaged. An assignment sound.
100%.
That's the thing. You can get selfish and go for self and blow up a play in football if you're trying to do too much.
Are you subtweeting Tyreek Stevenson right now? Because that's what it feels like you're doing. That's what it feels like you're doing.
Man.
All right, we need to take a break. When we come back, we've got to discuss the Hall of Fame with this man right here. Next on The Score.
I'd like to thank everyone on the Hall of Fame committee for the just the generous hospitality they've shown us.
I will never forget that if you love this game, it will love you back.
There's no shortcuts to success. Hard work, dedication, commitment. Stay true to who you are. God bless you all, and I thank you.
If this validates anything, it's that learning how to bunt and hit and run and turning two is more important than knowing where to find the little red light at the dugout camera.
Listen to all those Hall of Famers, those Chicago Hall of Famers, Hawk and the Commander, Rhino and Big Frank. Matt Spiegel was at Cooperstown. Did you see Barry's donation to the Hall of Fame?
It's no longer on display. Barry Rosner's,
that is BS.
I know, his vendor uniform, no longer on display. What I did, though, after our impromptu visit to the Hall of Fame, because me and Christine found ourselves up there, and it was a lovely visit, I had been texting with Barry, and I thought of this spot that he referenced on our show when he was talking about his dear friend Ryan Sandberg after the speech, which Barry wrote, went so well.
It was the best night I ever had in baseball, that's for sure. Later on the patio, you know, we took some more pictures, and then Rhino and I just sat out there for hours talking about what had happened that day. And it was such a high. It was such, we couldn't come down from the high of what had just happened.
So Christine and I went and had a drink on that patio after our visit to the Hall of Fame. And it was nice to just sit there and know that's where Barry and Rhino had their moment and where all the Hall of Famers had been hanging out that night. So
where he got escorted in by Rhino and he's seeing like the greats of the greats.
I want to meet Hank Aaron. I want to meet Koufax. I want to meet Seaver. And he proceeded to meet all of those people and take pictures with all those people. The goodness of Rhino to welcome him in. So yeah, but it was so cool to be there. The only other time I've ever been to the Baseball Hall of Fame was with my late father when I was 17. It's like a summer road trip before I went off to college. He said, all right, this is time. We should go do this together. So just me and him in Cooperstown. So it was nice to think of him. The tour of the plaque room itself, where all the plaques were, was so cool. I learned so much stuff. Catfish Hunter with no logo on his hat because he didn't want to piss off any of his former teams. He's the only guy with no logo. The fact that Roberto Walker Clemente had his plaque changed to Roberto Clemente Walker at the request of his family, because that's how it's actually written in Puerto Rico, was pretty cool. And then the fact that Jackie Robinson had, in June 2008, a sentence added to his plaque, which had only been about baseball and the accomplishments on the field, but they added this, quote, displayed... That's what happens at Showtime at the Apollo when they decide you're not worthy of any stage time. Is that what that happens?
Sandman comes out, gives you the hook, sweeps you off the stage.
You guys are the worst. Worst. And also the best. Here was the sentence that they added. We'll give it a shot again. See if it happens. Bastards. Displayed tremendous courage and poise in 1947 when he integrated the modern major leagues in the face of intense adversity. I hadn't realized that that wasn't on the plaque at the beginning and then was put on the plaque in 2008. That was damn cool to learn.
Yeah, they really only talked about him as a ball player.
Yeah.
And then you have that because of the importance of Jackie Robinson to the Republic. Like, it wasn't just to baseball. It was the entire country. And then you look at his background as someone who was a military man on top of it, who he really had a love for this country, even in the face of the most awful racism in front of him. And that watching his evolution as a person and as a political person is fascinating.
that it's a good museum, man. It's still a really good little museum. And there's actually, there's more to it than there used to be. And it's so freaking worth the trip. And the town is just adorable. You know, and all the souvenir shopping and stuff you can do in the quaint little town, like highly recommend. If you're a baseball lover, you got to make sure you get there. I'm so glad we made time for it in the midst of a vacation.
The things that I like was so in awe by when I was there is Jackie Robinson's jersey, because then you start to think of like, it's the closest thing you have to the human being there. You know what I mean? Like, you think about what he went through, like wearing that, seeing Babe Ruth's jersey, full uniform, I believe. Babe Ruth's full uniform.
It's crazy.
Right when you walk in, it's just, it's crazy, man.
Yeah. And the display, I heard Layla and Marshall talking about rings, because the Eagles ring that they're going to debut tomorrow night is just absurd. They had a display of all the World Series rings through the years.
When does it make the jump?
Oh, God. I think it's the second Red Sox title where it makes the ridiculous jump, but there's a few different jumps along the way. I took a picture of that display because, like, just the evolution into what it is now is just a ridiculous and absurd thing.
I'm so glad you got to go, man. That sounds like an awesome trip and an awesome time for sure.
I'm glad I got the segment in.
We are too. When we come back, let's talk about Ben Johnson as a play caller and the management of being a head coach and a play caller. Where does he rank as far as the best play callers in the league goes? There's a list, and we'll share it with you next on The Score.